Good morning, 737, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Happy Thursday! We're one day closer to better temperatures. We're not there, we're not even close, but we're closer. I mean, we're closer. Yeah, celebrate closer, right? yeah, that's right. Joining us now, we have Mike Wood. He is the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Good morning, Candy.
Good morning.
And by the way, welcome back from Nashville. Did you have a productive time at the PIO's conference?
Yeah, I actually did. There was about 600 of us there from all over the country, and we went over some situations that went right, some that went wrong. So hopefully if something like that happens in Pensacola, we're far more prepared than we were when I went up there. One of them was I saw footage of the school shooting in Nashville that was never released to the public. That was awful difficult to sit through. But, you know, after that was over with, then, I've got in my head what we need to do to improve things should something like that happen here on the public information, on the communications part of it.
Very good. Well, always good to get more training. That's excellent to hear. A couple of incidents that have happened. By the way, just this morning, you and I were already talking about this about a half hour ago, but just this morning I had reports of a number of PPD cruisers high speed going up scenic. I guess you said towards Montaigne Drive. What turned out to be the case there?
Well, there was a disturbance, a possibly armed disturbance that the officers were responding to, and once they got there, the individual had left, so they were circulating the area looking for him, and at this point, they haven't found him, but that's what that was about. And, you know, it's funny, our officers are constantly asking me, how does the media find out about these things so incredibly fast? But, you know, years ago, that didn't happen, but with phones and social media and things like that, it just takes a matter of seconds before people are asking what's going on, either to the media or to me or just posting it on social media, and it starts to spread pretty fast. So that's one of the reasons why I always try to stay on top of these calls that were going on, and our supervisors are very good about notifying us so we can notify you about what's going on, because if we don't, then people are going to start making up things on social media, and some of the things can snowball out of control. So we try to stay in front of these stories as best we can.
And you do it better than anybody else, and, you know, the proactivity is amazing, and you're exactly right. You know, we get a call, hey, I see five cops here, blank, what's going on? And I text you, and you always have something for me pretty quickly, because, as you say, otherwise, you know, the rumors will start, okay? And a lot of times it's nothing. I mean, a lot of times it's not that big of a deal, and that's important too. One thing is there was a robbery at the Bayou Bank of America. I think it was late last week. Is that right?
Yeah, it was. There was an individual there refilling the ATM. He was approached by two males who said or pointed something into his back, and he believed it to be a handgun. And robbed him. So we're still looking for those two individuals. Fortunately, nobody was injured. And if we urge anybody that has any information to give us a call or to call Crime Stoppers.
All right. One of the things we talked about with Mayor Reeves is because of the dredge spoil deposit area over on what I call Hobo Beach, that isolated, not quite island, but sort of an island over there east of the train trestle at 17th Avenue, that they're enforcing more of the no-go zone there. It's not really supposed to be a place where people go, but they're I guess you guys would be the ones enforcing it. Are you having any trouble? What can you tell me about what's going on there?
I wouldn't say it was trouble. I would say that, you know, once they're asked to leave, they do. They just keep going back over there. That's been kind of a hangout for transients for many years. So there's, like you said, there's construction or dredging going on over there, and it makes it more dangerous for people to be there, especially while heavy machinery is present. So we're making walkthroughs over there constantly and making sure nobody's over there in the way where they could get hurt.
Any other incidents or events that you want to tell us about that have happened in the last week?
Well, yesterday we had two juveniles arrested for a daytime home burglary in the 3000 block of Bellmead Court. Officers responded to that pretty quickly after we got the call and were able to make an arrest after the juveniles initially fled on foot. So it's a good reminder that, you know, that these bad guys know people have to work in the daytime, and that's usually when they're going to be away from their home. So it's always good to make sure you lock those doors, those garage doors, and if you have an alarm on the house, that's even better. You know, those things are a lot cheaper now than they've ever been to be able to put an alarm on your house. So, yeah, those daytime burglaries do happen, and fortunately, everything came out good yesterday.
You know, that's one of the things that you and I have talked about before is the belief that the real risk for you is the 3 a.m. break-in where suddenly you're going to have to be in a firefight defending your home and your dogs and your kids and all that kind of stuff. But burglars, though criminals are often dumb, they are also often not as dumb as you'd think, and they would rather go into a house where they know nobody's there, and that's when you're away at work, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no cars in the driveway, and they pretty much feel like that you're at work. And they also know, you know, this is the South. If you go into a house in the middle of the night around here, you're liable to get shot. So they're going to err on the side of caution and hit that house in the daytime. So it's very important to lock those doors. It doesn't matter where you live. If you live in a quiet neighborhood or way out in a rural area, you need to secure that home.
You know, you bring up something about going into the house, and of course, we know that the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Simmons, your former police chief, was talking about this case in the mobile home park where the brother was brought in to help protect the sister, basically, from the ex-boyfriend who had invaded the home and was pointing a gun at him, and you know, he drew his own gun and fired, and you know, is bad for the other guy. And the sheriff basically said, if you aim a gun at somebody and, you know, cock it to shoot it, you're justified in shooting back. And some people have been calling this a stand your ground case. And I guess, I don't know, maybe it's just like the philosopher in me that cares about the terms, the, you know, terminology nerd in me. But stand your ground is outside the home. That's where you don't have to flee because we've taken the castle doctrine, which is you can protect your home from an intruder, and applied it out in public. But then self-defense is, I mean, an entirely different thing. Self-defense is if somebody is going to threaten your life or somebody else's life, you're justified in protecting yourself even to lethal means if necessary, regardless of the location. And that's not even stand your ground. Do I have any of that wrong?
You have that exactly right. Stand your ground is a term that's used loosely a lot. Most of that is outdoors, like you said, not all of it, but that basically means you do not have to retreat. You do not have to run. You have the right to protect yourself or others. When you're in the home, obviously that's your home. You don't have to retreat, and you also have the right to protect your home and those in it. So, yeah, it's used kind of loosely a lot, but in certain cases, that's absolutely not what it's not what it is. I mean, like I said, most of the time that's going to be in an outdoor type situation.
Well, I appreciate that. And just kind of one of those things, because that stand your ground law has been surrounded with controversy and criticism, I hate that we call ordinary cases of self-defense or castle doctrine standard. You know, like it sort of throws everything into the controversy, and not everything is in the controversy. Anyway, it's just, you know, my nerd moment. I knew you'd appreciate that, and I wanted to bring it up with you. We talked a little bit about this with Sergeant Surgeon last week while you were out at the conference, but I guess the replacement vehicle for the old plumber's vans that SWAT uses to get on scene is on its way, the Bearcat. But you guys have some other infrastructure things you're working on, including securing that back lot to have better fencing, right?
Yeah, that construction's going on now. You know, Mayor Reeves came down. He looked at the police department, the equipment. He listened to the command staff on what we needed, and he hit the ground running and got to work. And these things are happening quickly. We're incredibly glad to see this happening. That back lot has been unsecure for as long as I've been there, which has been 1994. It's something that's been needed. You know, we've had people in the back lot that have tried to get into our secure impound area. We've had an individual set one of our cruisers on fire. So it's been a long time coming, and that construction is underway now, and we're glad to see it.
Very good. Anything? We always like to end with a cop myth or a did you know. You got one for me this week?
Yeah, I was to ask if the mug books, you know, the ones that are about 2 feet thick that you see on TV shows that people have to sit through for hours and hours and hours to try to find a suspect.
Yeah, the family photo albums of other people's families, right?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. I was asking if those are real, if we really use those. And the answer is yes and no. Back in the day, those did exist, but not so much anymore. It's all digital. Usually, you know, in this day and time, we have video, we have photos, we have a lot more to go on. If a person just does not know and kind of can describe the individual, then we can pull up digitally. You know, you can't pull up a suspect of that they believe is one race and then put five others on the page with them of a different race. You have to be fair about it. It has to be, you know, all the same race, the same age, the same, you know, facial hair, that sort of thing, and let them pick that individual out. But to answer the question, we do still have that sort of thing, but it's in a digital format.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because you bring up what to me is kind of interesting, okay? You know, sociological research clearly tells you what common sense we already knew, which is that typically white people have a harder time differentiating black faces from white faces or Asian faces from white. You know, it's like you know your kind of people, so to speak, and it's harder for you to differentiate other kinds of people that you haven't had to differentiate for your whole life. And I often wonder, and that's like the idea of identifying somebody who victimized you. Being a victim of anything is a high stress moment. It's, you know, you got all your body doing all kinds of weird things. You know, you don't pay attention to the right stuff. It seems to me like the victim of a crime has got to often have a very hard time identifying the suspect, even if it's somebody of, let's say, the same race as them, but an even harder time if it's somebody of a different race, because their certainty level would have to be pretty low. A lot of, am I thinking about this the right way? Is that a real problem that you run into?
It can be, but you know, after time goes by, a lot of times that comes back, that image comes back, that mental image, and they're able to come in and do a better job. But they're going to describe as best they can, and then that's when the detectives will get similar photos and show the individual and let them look through that and see what happens after that. But a lot of times, initially, after a crime happens, it's very difficult for that individual to recall. But, you know, maybe a month later, memory starts to come back, and we can have some success at that.
Yeah, I just remember when I went through the Citizens Police Academy that, you know, I was one of the, God, I forget, I was like a bank teller or something like that, and they had some people come in and rob us, right, to simulate a robbery. And that wasn't even a real incident. That was just a simulated incident. And it was over so quickly that I remember that, you know, well, what did you notice as identifying marks? Did you notice any tattoos? What kind of height? What kind of hair? That kind of stuff. And I'm like, I have no idea. Like, I just don't. It was all a blur, you know. And so I'm always amazed that people in real situations can identify, and especially when they can identify facing the challenge of identifying somebody that's outside their racial group, typically. That's what I was thinking about. So that's what it made me think about. Mike Wood, he is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Sir, as always, thank you for the time. Thanks for keeping us informed and always being so quick with great information. I appreciate that.
Thank you, sir.